Got.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the war room. You got Dev, Chill, Jimmy, PJ, and B. Austin, the hot
block. Y'all may have done yet, bro.
How you want it in the 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level? Bold with them topics, sort of like the rebels. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five store on primetime. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. From sports medicine to sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the world ain't Kuwait. It's the war room with 5 nights at the round table. 5 Philly guys, diversified and educated.
All right, people, it's Thursday, August 25th, 2011. We'd like to welcome you sports fans to another edition of the most Illmatic sports show this side of the San Andreas fault line. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm here with my whole squad tonight. We got Jimmy Williams, Paul Johnson, and Akil Bayon and B. Austin are back from the disabled list. Tonight we're going to discuss Pat Summitt, NBA players in China, Fitzgerald's bank-breaking contract, Terrell Pryor, the candlestick shootings, Peyton's neck, NFL preseason week 3, and much more. Y'all know the drill, so get in that chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom and join the conversation. Also, call in when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline and holler at the fellas. That number is 323-410-0012. We want to wish a happy anniversary to our other favorite show, the Broad Street Line. Roy and Chris had their one-year anniversary show yesterday, and it was a great one. So check out the replay at blogtalkradio.com/Broad Street and check them out live every Wednesday at 6 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Yesterday, the show was kind of crazy. Like usual, since they go a day before us, they talk about a lot of the same things that we end up talking about, but we all got our own separate spin on everything. But right now, I got birthdays on my menu. Get my Kelsey.
My birthday, yay!
All right, y'all, birthdays are brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon, 9221 Oxon Hill Road, Fort Washington, Maryland. Go down there and see Lisa and get your hair did. Y'all ready to do this today, fellas?
What yes, sir.
All right. Well, the first birthday, old MLB-er, one Mr. Roland Glenn, but better known as Raleigh Fingers, turned 65 today.
My birthday, yay!
Jimmy, I know he's an old head. You got any recollection of Raleigh Fingers?
Yo, funny thing is I do have a recollection. It has nothing to do with his game, but he used to have that crazy like handlebar mustache, yo. And that's why I remember him. Because coming up, I used to collect baseball cards, and his cards was crazy. Yo, he had the crazy mustache.
Yo, that's exactly what I remember about him. The funny thing is, the MLB, they got a little campaign going on right now where they have these shirts. The shirt is like a big face and a cap of whatever team the dude played for, but the face is blanked out, and it's just like if they had crazy hair. So Raleigh Fingers' joint just got like the handlebar mustache, a blank face, and an A's cap. And I got me a Mike Schmidt joint. You can tell the player, you can tell who the players
are.
By their wild hair coming out the cap or like a mustache. But Kill, Raleigh Fingers.
Yeah, all I have on Raleigh Fingers is the same thing that Jimmy said, but I'm going to add to it. He not only had, like, the handlebar mustache, he had, like, the handlebar mustache with, like, a curl on each top at one point. I used to take a curling iron on each side and just curl it up. Like, he was, like, a French painter or something. So that's all I got on Raleigh. Cool.
Be often. Raleigh Fingers. Raleigh
Yo,
Noodle.
Never. Raleigh Noodle. Whenever, whenever y'all go first, usually I'd be running out of things to say, but I got y'all this time. My man Raleigh Fingers not only rocked the hottest mustache in MLB ever, he was a 7-time All-Star, 3-time World Series champion, and he won the Cy Young Award in 81. So not only was his mustache game on point, he was actually nice and was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 92. So shout out to Raleigh Fingers. You also got two numbers retired on two different ball clubs, the Brewers and the Athletics.
There it is. Be
okay.
Knowledge on y'all. All right, our second birthday of the day. This dude gets a lot of conversation in sports talk circles, but he's not really worthy of all the conversation. But he's a seven-time NBA champion. That dude is Robert Keith Horry Jr. Turns 41 today.
My birthday!
Yay! Bayon, Robert Horry.
Yo, man, first of all, I know he lost a young child, so that's sad, I know, this past year. So prayers go out to him and his family. But he was, I mean, I wouldn't say, I think he's kind of overrated in terms of they're like, man, he should go into Hall of Fame, and he was clutch. I mean, he hit clutch shots, so credit to his clutch. And like you alluded to a lot, Devin, they should probably have a place about his clutch shots in playoffs in the Hall of Fame. But him, he shouldn't have a NBA bust of Robert Horry, the player, who averaged like 8 points and four rebounds a game in the Hall of Fame.
Word, no doubt. Austin,
that's me.
Robert Horry.
Thank you, brothers. Robert Horry averaged 7 points per game, one steal, two assists, and four rebounds. Mind you, he was 6'10", going on 6'11", shot 72% from the line and 42% from the field. First of all, you can't be 6'10", 6'11", only shooting 42% from the field. So FOH right there. He was a bum. Y'all can stop talking about Robert Horry. He averaged 7 points per game, 4.8 rebounds, two assists, and shot 42.5% from the field. Did y'all hear me? 7 points.
I'm gonna go to Jimmy with that one because you know after.
I'm not going to put it like this though. I'm not going to diss. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but I'm not going to diss him the way everybody else is dissing him. Because basketball is not played on a stat sheet, and when it was time to make a play, he was there. He has made more big shots than some of your favorite players who are Hall of Famers who never made a big shot in their life. You look at a lot of guys that, you know, who had skills beyond belief, but, you know, failed in clutch situations. Shout out to my man LeBron James. And then you look at my man Robert Horry, when at the biggest moments is when he played his best. So I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. But at the same time, I got to respect what he did.
Yeah.
You respect 7 points per game.
One thing with me, though, some of my favorite players were the ones passing him the ball in them situations, leaving him wide open because they was double and tripling my favorite players. But, yeah,
hey,
shout out
to that. He was a professional basketball player.
Shout out to
another thing. Hey, yo, another thing, he was supposed to be the next Scottie Pippen. That's what he was supposed to be coming out of college.
Yeah, that didn't happen. But he got one more ring, Scotty, though. And for a lot of people, that's all that counts. But let's move on from Robert Keith Horry Jr. and go on to Marvin Daniel Harrison, Philly homeboy, turns 39.
Yay!
Jimmy, I'm going to go with you.
Yo, Marvin Harrison, one of the greatest receivers ever. And what's funny is I was roommates with his cousin and also his brother when I was in college. So, you know, I met him on several different occasions, but his family was my roommates up at college or whatever. But that's what I think of when I think of him and, you know, him playing with Peyton Manning and putting up numbers and, you know, being quiet and then just pretty much walking away from the game and, like, disappearing in a sense. And, you know, got in some other trouble that I'm not going to speak on. I'll leave that to somebody else. But, you know, one of the top receivers ever.
Yeah, Marv was he was an excellent route runner. He was kind of small in stature receiver. But, like you said, his route running was so precise, and, you know, him combining with Peyton Manning, it made one of the best quarterback-to-receiver duos that, you know, many of us has ever seen. So props to Marv. I'm going to go ahead and go to B. Austin on this, Marvin Harrison.
Yo, first of all, I'm probably going to overrate him because he's from the crib, so I think he's top five dead or alive at that position. 8-time Pro Bowler, 8-time All-Pro, 1,100 receptions, 14,580 yards, 128 TDs in a 13-year career. Yo, my man was nice. What else do you need? What else can you say? I know Jimmy says it's not played on a stat sheet, but for his stature, 1,100 receptions and 14,000.
I feel you.
Yeah, that's my man.
Doc Bay.
Yo, and he made the league. And he made the league despite playing in college with Donovan.
And his college stats are terrible, except for 1 year.
You know why? He can't catch with his feet. Good, man.
Hey, I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, great receiver, put up a lot of stats, you know, scored, had 143 receptions 1 year. But I'll be honest, I still wonder about some of the details that happened at the shootout in Philly. Was it him? Was it not him? I heard he owned custom handmade guns that were like top quality. And I wish I could, they could make a movie and I get the details about what happened in Philly. But shout out to him and his great career.
Similar to Wild West, broad daylight, face to face without a vest. But yo, shout out to Marvin Harrison. This one is a RIP birthday shout out to one of the greats in history, Miss Althea Gibson.
My birthday, yay!
She was born August 25th, 1927, and you know, if anybody knows their history, at least their sports history or their black history, they know that, you know, she was the first African-American woman to play on the tennis tour. So her, you know, they kind of gave her the moniker, the female Jackie Robinson, because she broke some barriers. So anybody want to say anything real quick about Althea Gibson before we move on?
Yeah, Miss Gibson. Miss Gibson won 4 Grand Slam titles, singles, and 4 Grand Slam titles, doubles. She was nice. And she was from East Orange, New Jersey. Shout out to our homie Vic Montgomery.
Big nice. All right. We got one more birthday shout out. And this is a real homie of the show. Our homeboy Dirty Dame Hudgens. He's the
greatest theme music ever.
He's the author who penned and performed the War Room theme music, so we want to give a shout out to Dirty Dame on his birthday. Happy birthday, homie.
Hey, Dame, five Philly guys. Diversified.
Hey, yo, we got one more birthday that we missed last week. Shout out to co-host Devin McMillan, who had a birthday last August 19th. Shout out to the homie Dev.
He didn't give himself a shout out on his own birthday. How about that?
You're locking
up. Marshall.
Welcome
to the war room.
All right, so that's your birthdays for the day. Hey, Jimmy, tell everybody what happened while they were on the grind.
No doubt. Yo, what happened while you on the grind is brought to you by Philly Auto Design, and some of you need to get your rims done right, especially y'all with them hoopties. But at any rate, first thing I want to talk about is Pet Summit. It came out that Pet Summit has early onset dementia. Now, when I first heard this story, I was wondering whether she would coach or not. Then I saw she would. And then I thought about the fact that Joe Paterno has probably had dementia for 20 years. So I said, okay, maybe she can do it. But that's just my opinion. So let me ask you guys, what do you think about Pat Summit and her early onset dementia?
Man, it's a sad situation, man. Like you said, she decided that she's going to go ahead and stick it out and coach for as long as she can. Pat Summit is definitely one of the best. Her name always comes up, you know, when people ask, is there a woman's coach who could probably coach in a men's game? You know, her name always comes up. But so you know, I just want to send a prayer out to her, and hope things, you know, stay on the up and up as long as possible, so she can keep doing what she does.
I mean, it really touches my heart because I have a parent that suffers from Alzheimer's and dementia. So you know, it's really like glad to see her still being able to commit to doing what she loves and fighting as long as you know she fights, because it truly is the cliche. It's not whether you win or lose. It's how you play the game, and she's playing the game the best way she know how. And, you know, her and Joe Paterno are showing that you can still do it at a high level at an old age.
Joey keep breaking his hips, though.
He want to die on the 50-yard line.
He's going to get his wish.
That's really sad. Just knowing what dementia does to the brain in terms of like if you get a brain spec scan, it shows like you actually produce holes and ridges within your brain matter. So you just kind of like just lose parts of it. So certain things you can't remember, certain things you don't know. It messes with your occipital lobes, parietal lobes, prefrontal cortex. So, you know, hopefully she can get on a good plan that can maintain the brain matter that she does have.
Man, so she ain't got no idea who Shamika Holzclaw is. It's messed up.
Probably.
Man, that's crazy. Anyway, well, our prayers go out to her. You know, hopefully she can still perform at a high level, you know, even though she's struggling with that. Next story I want to talk about is young man Blake Griffin. You know, a lot of athletes are doing different things during this lockout. My question to you is this. He took a job at FunnierDie.com. I don't know if you're familiar with the website where they do, like, parodies and skits and things, but he took a job there. My question to you is, do you find Blake Griffin funny? And if not him, what athlete would you like to see that you consider funny?
That must be his thing, though, because you remember he did a couple of skits for the ESPYs. And I guess in a situational, you know, platform, I chuckled a little bit at those joints, so I guess he could be funny, but I don't know if it's natural. You know, they might just be, you know, because they're writing stuff for him. So I don't know if he's like a Shaq-type dude where he can just naturally command an audience and be funny, but, you know, I chuckled at the whole thing.
I like it, man. I like it. Hey, let him get his expression on. I would like to see Jared Allen, the defensive end from the Vikings. Quiet as kept, Mr. Glass up in Portland. Yo, when he did those Old Spice commercials, I shut out.
That is a good point. Those were funny.
My soul fell out my body with laughter. Yo, because he was dead serious but being funny at the same time and knew he was being funny.
And I also like that Blake Griffin, like, doesn't take himself too seriously. You know, I like that he can kind of be like that. I mean, cause he knows
when we went to
sometimes
we went to the Wizards.
Like, White Howard, cats like him don't really know how to off sometimes. Go ahead, Awesome. So,
When we went to the Wizards-Clippers game, the Wizards should have taken him seriously.
Yeah, he was dead serious.
Hey, Doc Bay, you got any thoughts on this? And what athlete do you find funny?
I mean, I think it's funnier that Delonte West decided to get a job at Home Depot. I find that more funnier than the Blake Griffin situation.
Oh, God. All right, well, shout out to Blake Griffin for not taking himself too serious. Another quick story. Your man, Belichick, he's in the news because he says that he wants to get rid of extra points and kickoffs altogether. He thinks that they're a waste of time and that they're not real football plays. He suggests that we're going to kick an extra point, stop giving them a chip shot and move it back maybe to the, you know, the 20 or 30-yard line, or just get rid of it altogether. And if we're going to move the kickoffs up, why not just give the team the ball at the 20 and just forget the kickoff play? What are your guys' thoughts on this?
Shut up. Yo, shut up, Bill Belichick. You're a cheater. Shut up.
Well, he sounds like he's just trying to, you know, do away with kickers. You know, a lot of people say they're not real football players, but that's funny because Bill Belichick was he was the head coach of probably the next kicker to get into the Hall of Fame. Is there any kicker?
Yeah,
in the
you
Hall
ain't
of
never
Fame?
Lied. I don't know, but I know that he was the reason they won a lot of them games was the kicker.
He won three Super Bowls from the kicker. This is
what
he's talking about.
Yeah, what do you think, Vinatieri? I mean, he's not in New England anymore, but with him hearing these kind of comments, what do you think he's thinking? Like,
he doesn't want to get rid of kickers. He just says that the extra point is stupid. And he just I heard him say something like,
"One of the only
maybe run another."
He said the extra point and the kickoff. That's 2/3 of their job.
He wants to keep field goals, but he wants to get rid of the other piece because. He'd rather them have to go for a 2-point conversion every time. So therefore, you get 6 when you score, and either you get 2 or you won't. But you have to go for a 2-point conversion every time.
No, him. He liked to go for 2-point conversions, and he liked to go for stuff on 4th down. So he's trying to decrease the scrutiny on him when he makes one of those calls. Like, I got to do it now. So
you guys before this? I mean, what would you think, though? Are you purist that you like the game the way it is, or would you be for this?
I think I'm cool with it the way it is. I mean, they can move the kickoff back to where it was, so, you know, certain dudes like Devin Hester won't be obsolete in the league, but I don't think you can do away with it. I like the fact that you have the choice. Like, you know, I can either go for one or I can go for two, you know? So
it makes it
better and more strategic.
Being completely objective and reasonable, kickers have a place in the game. I mean, I think that is obviously the most rainbowish part of the sport. But you gotta even moving kickoffs forward and all of these touchbacks, that's really, really whack. I was gonna say something else, but it's really, really whack. Go ahead. We got to keep it moving, y'all.
No doubt. I have one more story for you.
You are gay.
Exactly.
Thank you. Listen, all the kickers, yo. But listen, though. Question is this. Well, not even a question. This is what happened. I want to get you guys' opinion on this. But Torrey, you guys know Torrey, the guy that does, like, the interviews for MTV and he, like, writes and what have you? The guy with plain looking afro.
Dude,
I don't know if you know him anyway.
The dude is not cool enough to just have one name.
Hey, that's your opinion. Not saying I disagree or agree, but at any rate, he wrote an article talking about He made an article talk about Michael Vick and race and whether everything would have happened to him the same way if he were white. But that's not the part of the story which is getting a lot of attention. What happened was he was writing it for ESPN, and what ESPN got his article before they posted it, they went and had a computer rendering of Michael Vick turning him white to show what he would look like if he was white. So, like, people were, like, going off about this picture. So my question is, what do you guys think about this? I mean, are they out of line for doing this, or, you know, are they just trying to spruce up? Dev, you the editor. So what do you think about this?
Mike Vick done came all the way back so far, they got another race claiming it.
No, but I, you know, I mean, I think, first of all, a lot of things that have something to do with cats like Mike Vick, other black players, a lot of people take stuff a little too seriously. But, you know, I saw the picture, and I do think it was unnecessary. You know, let the guy write his article and get his points across. The picture was unnecessary, but I still don't see a reason for everybody to be so up in arms about it. It was definitely unnecessary. It's like, what's the whole point of, you know, making the dude into a white guy? You know, the point that the author tried to get across will get across in his article. You know, they didn't have to add that to the picture. But, you know, saying all that, it's not that serious, man.
So what you're saying really is that by putting the picture up, they distracted from the actual article itself.
Exactly. I mean, because you see what we're talking about here. Like, nobody's really talking about the article. And given that any validity, all they're worried about is the picture. And I guess, you know.
Well, I'm not talking about the article because it was written by Ture.
Yeah, but I don't think it's that much of an issue. But we'll see if it grows legs.
Yeah. So I just want to get you guys' opinion. Anyway, that is what happened while you were on the ground. What's up?
Hey, yo, real quick, I wanted to say, what was worse, that Michael Vick picture, as him being white, or the picture of Jay-Z and Kanye West being merged together in the face?
that was egregious, but at the same time, like, Jay-Z and Kanye apart, like, you know, what the hell, no homo. But anyway, let me be quiet, man, because I'm going to try to cut back on me disrespecting people. But at any rate, that's what happened while you were on the grind, Dev.
That's what we do here in the war room. So tonight earlier, I had to, you know, get into the kitchen.
I'm trying to save some shots for later because I got a bunch of shots a little.
All right, cool. Well, it's time to pass that rock. Pass the Rock is brought to you by Bay Financial Services. Man, get your money right. Get your credit right. You're not going nowhere in this life with what you got. So see Bay Financial Services. Yes. All right, if this is your first time listening, Pass the Rock is a segment that we do where all five of your hosts, it's four of us right now, we get to vent on any sports topic of the week. not even of the week, any sports topic we want, and we pass that rock like a basketball team since it's all, it's usually five of us. So I'm going to start it off. This is Devin.
Tell them why you're mad, sir.
Tell y'all why I'm mad. I got a little West Coast beef. I got a beef right now with the West Coast. Well, mainly just the state of California. Are the in-state professional sports rivalries that serious, or y'all just on some other stuff? We all remember the Dodger Stadium beatdown of a San Francisco Giants fan early in the baseball season that left the man clinging to his life. This past Saturday at Candlestick Park in San Francisco, during and after a 49ers-Raiders preseason game, two people were shot in separate incidents in the parking lot, and a third was beaten unconscious in a stadium bathroom. This all in addition to the multi-fan fight in the stands during the game. Reports say that one of the shooting victims was a Raiders fan wearing an F the 49ers t-shirt. I'm not sure if you've noticed, but I always have a lot to say in these types of situations. And being a Philly fan, I will continue to bring attention to these types of crimes as long as Eagles fans are still being condemned as an evil fan base for booing a guy in a Santa suit way back in 1968. Yeah, I'm on this again. These situations are much more serious than some booing, cursing, beer throwing, and some minor fisticuffs at a sporting event. Three people have experienced life-threatening injuries just at the two games I've mentioned. Now, I'm a diehard fan of my team, but can it really be this serious? And I got some more beef with the people from the West Coast about this whole earthquake thing, but I'm going to save that for a little later. So with that, I'm going to pass the ball to my man Akil Bayon, standing on the right wing.
Yo, that's just crazy, man. I mean, it's like some of these fans have more heart and fight for the team than some of the players. Crazy. All right. Good evening, War Room World. I just wanted to take the time to talk about some National Hockey League news. Now, it is not too often that we venture into the sport of hockey, but we have had Andrew Gross, who is a beat writer for the New York Rangers, in the War Room a couple of times. Now, for those that do not know, arguably the best NHL player next to Alex Ovechkin is Sidney Crosby. Sidney Crosby, who plays for the Pittsburgh Penguins, has been having severe headaches from post-concussion symptoms, which have forced him to discontinue his off-season workouts. It has been noted that Crosby started having the headaches when his workouts reached the 90% level of physical exertion. There is great possibility that Crosby will not be ready for the Pittsburgh Penguins training camp, which starts September 16th of this year. With the recent deaths of two NHL players who were suffering from post-concussion injuries, it seems as if the NHL may have to incorporate a concussion safety precaution plan that the National Football League has adopted. We also may see some rule changes in the NHL to protect players the same way we have seen rule changes in the NFL. Now, I don't have the inside scoop on anything, but these are just my speculations. Now, I wish Sidney Crosby a full healthy recovery and wish him all the best, except when he plays against the Philadelphia Flyers. But I want him to be 100% so the Pittsburgh fans don't have any excuses when we beat them. I'm done, and with that, I will throw a fundamental basketball camp style two-handed chest pass with perfect backspin to B. Austin, the hot block commander-in-chief.
Man, God bless him, and I hope he recovers fully. But as, you know, we move into a world of protecting athletes and their health more and more, it's really showing that these concussions are really serious. good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to give a shout-out and tip my cap to Dallas Cowboys linebacker Brady James for looking in the mirror and seeing what's staring back at him and the rest of his teammates. Now, as a Philadelphia Eagles fan, obviously I'm a little biased, and my this week's PTR rant may not have as much credibility as if it was coming from, say, a Cowboys fan, a delusional Cowboys fan, of which they're all delusional, with the exception of one, Akil Bayon. He's the only. He's got, Akil, you're kind of like an Eagles fan. You take an Eagles fan's perspective to being a fan of the Dallas Cowgirls. Like, that's interesting. In case you're wondering what I'm talking about, Brady James, who was drafted by the Cowboys in fourth round 2003 draft and has played his last six seasons as the team's starting left inside linebacker, came out this week and said, "Our alumni, our former greats, have made us America's team, and we reap benefits that we have not earned. All the way around, as individuals, as a team, those guys earned it. We just think we deserve it." Brady James went on to further say, "Man, by now I thought coming into this situation I'd have won at least two Super Bowls because I'm playing for America's team, not Tobago. I thought that because I played for America's team that I would have two snow bunnies and every time I stopped walking throwing rose petals at my feet and giving me a Chewbacca. Man, I played for America's team, so I thought that even when I went to the bathroom, it would smell good. I played for America's team," and so on and so on and so forth and so on and so forth. But in reality, folks, what I really appreciate about Brady James is he took the time to really look in the mirror and look at the product that was on the field that his teammates are putting out there. Look at ownership, look at management, and have a moment of introspection and tell the truth. He's not going back to 1990 and talking about that deep offensive line. He's not talking about what Emmitt Smith did. He's not talking about Leon Lett. He's not talking about Troy Aikman. He's not talking about the crackhead that's on TV now, number 88. He kept it real. Why don't you Cowgirls fans do the same? Look in the mirror, understand that it's 2011, your quarterback has only really had one great season, and you're not a good football franchise. You're not good. Be humble, hope that Jerry Jones gets it together, and then y'all can come rap with us. I'm going to pass the rock to my man, James the Blueprint Williams. Yo, holler at them peoples and tell them what it is.
No doubt, no doubt. I think that we need to come up with an official war room list of how do you determine when a championship can no longer be bragged about. We need like a statute of limitations or something, you know, because at the end of the day, you should be able to have it for a couple of years. But, like, I've argued with Celtics fans who were telling me about Bill Russell's championships, and they were born in, like, 80. So, you know, they violated.
Yo, aren't you a Broncos fan?
Yes, I am.
I've never heard you mention their Super Bowl wins.
All right.
Ever. I've never heard of it. But at the same time, though, I stopped
talking about the Phillies Jones already. That was 2008.
Yo, I'm going to keep it 100, though, Austin. I really don't brag about them until, like, I'm losing the argument, and that's, like, my trump card. So I'm going to keep it 100. So, you know, I violate, too. But with that being said, what's up, War Room? This is Jimmy, a.k.a. The Blueprint, a.k.a. Billy Ray Valentine. And this week, I want to talk to the adults in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, who have been gambling on South Florida Youth Football League games involving children between the ages of 5 and 15. First of all, shout out to my man Willie Garland, because I know he's listening, but I'm about to take a couple shots at people from your area. Yo, the four-letter show, Outside the Lines, a.k.a. They reported that tens of thousands of dollars are being bet on these youth football games, with youth football routinely pay bonuses for making big plays. Like, basically what they're doing is taking the players, and if they knock out certain players and make big plays, they're paying them bonuses outside of them just gambling on the games, as if that's not wrong. The report estimated about a fourth of the crowd at games is made up of criminals. Drug dealers place upwards of $20,000 in bets on regular season games and $75,000 on a recent league Super Bowl. In response to this, the Fort Lauderdale Police Department started what they call Operation End Zone. They purchased a new video surveillance vehicle that will be used to monitor and hopefully discourage all the repugnant behavior of the adults. Now, my thing is this. I don't care if you're in a gang, you're a drug dealer, a bank robber, a hitman, or a white-collar criminal. Exploiting children is wrong. Come on, y'all. We can do better. What are we doing here? I guess what they're doing is preparing all these kids to go to the U. They're paying them to put bounties on other kids. Are you kidding me? Like, yo, they're putting bounties on other kids. So all you cats that are gambling should be tossed in a pit of unfortunate. I understand that you're trying to make your chicken, but let me ask you a question. Who's to be praised, the mighty Dollar or the mighty Allah? Are you not oblivious to how this will affect the children? I mean, do you really not see how this is going to affect the children? And people wonder why, as a whole, our nation has issues. If the children are exposed to this repugnant behavior, the cycle will continue. So later on, they'll still be gambling on football games from 5 to 15-year-olds. I mean, come on, what's a wicked nation? One with blind men? And unless we teach the children what's really good, we will continue to live in a wicked nation. Now, I can go on for days about this, but I'm going to step off my soapbox so we can move on with the show. But before I do, remember one thing. I'm nice. And with that, finger roll.
And the crowd go.
Yo, Jimmy, they're looking for you like they was looking for Malcolm.
Yo, real quick, Austin, you got my Twitter blowing up because cats responding to you saying Marvin Harris is top five all time. You know, cats is saying you crazy, so I'm just letting you know.
He's top five Philly player. But yeah, y'all want to get in touch with us? Here's how. Check us out on our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, sign up for the War Report, our weekly newsletter, right from the homepage. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. If you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses are also on that page. And while you're still on the site, click on the Memorabilia tab to buy cool War Room Sports merchandise, and click the Blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All's Fair in Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to and friend our YouTube channel at warroomsportstv.com. For access to all of our media content in one place, anywhere, anytime, download the War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple device. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter account. And while you're at it, follow us, friend us, and favorite us to make the War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. Please subscribe to our iTunes podcast so you can listen to our show at any time on your own device. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with the host, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from the phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is just like raising your hand, and who knows? The War Room professors sitting right here just might call on you. And with that, throw it back over to Dev.
Yo, I got a question for y'all, man. We jump right into this. We only had to talk about this long. I just got a question about the Little League World Series, and I just posed that question on our chat room, so watch out.
You trying to bet on it?
Yo,
I
don't understand, like, how does America set the Little League World Series up so that an American team has to be in the championship game? How fair is that? There's a bracket. The 8 teams on the left side of the bracket are all from America, and then the 8 teams on the other side of the bracket are from different countries and regions around the world. So, like, does that sound fair to anybody? Like, I don't get it. Like, how come they don't have to go through an American tournament like all of these teams have to go through a tournament where they're from, and then the best team from America makes it to the tournament, to the Little League World
Series? I got an answer for you, brother.
America, F yeah, coming to see the Marshall. Yeah,
with Team America.
Yo,
with Team America.
The way it's structured,
America against the world.
Yo, because I was asking Monica because she watches a lot of the games. She was saying the way it's structured is all the other countries have their own like Little League World Series, and America doesn't participate until those countries finish their World Series. So it's sort of like they send the best, you know, the best of their best after they have their own country's World Series. So they're like
champions of it. But that's what I'm asking you. Why isn't America doing the same thing? And then they have the series between, you know, the tournament between the best teams. It's like,
well, because basically it's like two different leagues in a sense. It's like this. It's like we have the Little League World Series, but that doesn't mean, like, so if the Japanese team wins, they're already champions in their country. We don't have a champion, like an American champion, and, you know, that's just not the way it's structured.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Too. That's my question. Why don't they structure it like that?
Maybe we could do that. We could do the War Room League or whatever, you know. But there's this, basically, that's not the way it existed. And also, you know, baseball.
I don't think that's
baseball
fair.
Baseball has always been like a purist thing, whether it's in a little league level, the college level, the high school level. Baseball doesn't change rules. So if things were started one way, that's pretty much the way they stay.
That's like if the World Cup was hosted in Italy. Italy have like 8 teams in the tournament. And they own the whole bracket, so an Italian team has to make it to the championship because it's being hosted in Italy. That's corny.
See, but it's a little different. It's a little different just because, like, the Little League World Series is like those teams are already considered champions. It's hard to explain what I'm trying to say. It's like you really can't compare that to soccer.
I understand exactly what you're saying. I'm asking why is it like that? That's my only beef. I don't understand why it's like that. Why do we have to structure the tournament?
Because the baseball, there's so many baseball teams in America. There's probably about, like, you know, 15 teams to every one for another country. So when you look at the teams that play in a Little League World Series representing the American teams, they're pretty much all stars from the state. They're not really teams. So there's a lot of factors that go into why they structure it the way they do. Like,
it matters.
There wouldn't be any foreign teams. If you took the best teams, it wouldn't even be the World Series
if they got 8 teams from one country.
No, but this is what I'm saying. You took the best teams.
Man, America is the center of the world.
But listen, if you just took the best team to put them in a bracket, there wouldn't be any foreign teams because there's so many American teams that they have to pretty much consolidate them. And because they consolidate them, they run
it
to the
It would be foreign teams because that's how it would be set up. Like you said, they play the championships in their country to make it to the world. To Little League World Series, the American
so
team should play a tournament.
What you're saying,
Dad?
It would only be one team
from America.
Yes, the thing is, in order to have all the kids play, it'll have to go on all year long because there's so many Little League American teams. When you look at those teams in Little League World Series, every player pretty much comes from a different team. They're all star teams from each state.
So be it.
Man, y'all act like Atlanta ain't in America.
it'll pretty much be like an all year thing. They couldn't do that because, like, you know, there's not enough time for that.
I don't know why, but
I get you. I understand. I understand what you're saying, Jimmy. There's 1,000 little league teams in America, and there may only be 100 little league teams in Europe.
So they take the best of those 1,000 and put them. Pretty much part of it too, because they couldn't like put a bracket and have all them play to have one American team. They'd be playing, like, all year long.
You don't have to have that.
They'd be in the snow getting in.
You take the top 20, the top 50 American teams have a tournament.
Yeah, but how do you prove who the top teams unless they play each other? I mean, how do you prove who the top teams?
How do they prove who the top teams in other countries? Because they have a tournament.
But they don't have that many teams. They're able to have tournaments because they only got 15 teams in a whole damn country. We got 15 teams just in Jersey.
I ain't buying that. This has been a 20-second conversation. All y'all had to say is because it's America. That's not the answer I want. That's the answer. Because all you're all you're doing is telling me the situation. I already know the situation. That's why I asked the question.
No, but what I'm saying is there's reasons for it. It's not just because we're just brodying a whole side of a bracket.
Man, we are brodying the whole side of a bracket. There's no reason. You don't have to put all 1,000 teams in the tournament.
Well, how do you determine who's the best teams if you're going to do that? You can't determine if you let them play.
Well, how do they do that with the Little League football? They have a Little League Super Bowl.
They don't have as many. There's not as many Little League football teams as it is baseball. There's just not. There's more Little League baseball teams than any other Little League sport in the country, with the exception of basketball because it's played all year long indoors. But there's more Little League baseball teams by far than football.
All of them ain't on this level.
What'd you say?
You keep saying that. It's only 8 of them in this one. You're acting like it's 1,000 teams in the Little League Pro Tour.
Because what they did is they made all-star teams. Every Little League team from America is all-star teams. They're taking the best players.
John and Chase.
Okay,
John
so
and
they,
Chase
can have little, they can have little all-star AAU tournaments.
And football,
in
and football also doesn't have an international appeal, so you really can't compare football to baseball. But just on the American side, there's way more Little League baseball teams. They make all-star teams that represent the U.S. That's what they do.
Okay, so why it's like a little league AAU? Why can't they take the top teams and do a tournament? You keep answering the question like that, but there's 8 teams in the bracket, so they did that somehow. They got it down to 8 teams somehow, right?
Yeah, but
so
what I'm saying,
they,
so you
okay,
want to
so
you want to kind of make it unfair.
Is,
you want to kind
this
of make
is.
It unfair for the American side because
I'm making
more
it unfair.
American
they got 8 teams in the bracket. Listen,
because you want
listen,
the best
listen,
team
listen,
to
listen,
win. You don't want
right
you don't want the
Just listen to this point right here. They got 8 teams in the bracket, right? You're saying there's so
mm-hmm.
many teams. They got 8 teams in the bracket. How many mm-hmm. more games would it take to whittle 8 teams down to 1? What's that, 2-3 more rounds?
First
What's
off,
so hard about
first off, it's not single elimination. But second off, even beyond that, you'll be doing a disservice to the American side by just dwindling them down because they have the best players. So it's like – we're doing them a favor by letting them even come over here playing the Little League World Series.
Oh,
yeah.
This sounds like the establishment now. We're doing them a
yeah.
favor. It's the World
no,
Series.
No, because at the end of the day, they have their own leagues where they come from. So for them, this is just a big they get to come to America every year. It's not like the Olympics that travel. This is the
this
American
is my question,
Little League
This
World
is what
Series.
My question breaks down to. The left side of the bracket is all America. Why can't they do the left side of the bracket before the Little League World Series starts? Why can't they do that? And make it
say?
More. Why the left side of the bracket is all American teams, 8 teams.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they hold that tournament before they start calling it the Little League World Series? What's the hard part about that?
You mean
the winner
you mean
of that bracket,
those eight teams play each other before they start the World Series?
Before they start the World Series, and then you'll have the best team from America to play the best teams from all around the world.
Listen, we are America.
So do you want to dwindle it down from 16 teams competing to just like, you know, 9 or 10? Because there's not them. You have to have a certain amount of teams for them to have the brackets the way they do anyway. The
okay, Jimmy. Okay.
There's not that many teams from across
fix.
The country.
Easy fix. Top 2 teams from every country then. Easy fix. Top 2 teams from every country.
I mean, some countries only have one team. If you look at the teams that play, some of them only have one team.
5 minutes ago, you just talked about the other teams, the other countries having tournaments to get here.
No, but you
got to
look how many teams are in the World Series. Other countries,
they
have
to have a tournament.
The Japanese team does. The Japanese team does.
The Japanese team does. Japan has one baseball. Japan has one.
No, the Japanese team does have their own tournament. Is what I'm saying. Every country represents.
And so does the rest of Jimmy.
But a lot of them.
The team from Uganda that we talked about, they weren't just coming from. They had to play a tournament. They played the Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, but they played Saudi Arabia, absolutely. But there's no
okay.
African tournament for them to play in. So
Jimmy,
what I'm saying is,
but that was it was a Middle East Africa. Their region is their little league.
Exactly.
They still had to play
that's
somebody to get. So if they made
that's
it to the championship, okay. So why can't 2 teams from that region? Why can't Africa and Saudi Arabia come? So that'll fill out your bracket.
Because now you're talking about other things. Now you're talking about the economics of it, time travel. This is played in the same place every year. It's not the Olympics that travels. So first off, you need American teams in order for it to be sustainable. If you put a bunch of teams, 2 teams from every country in there, the Americans are the ones supporting it. Nobody from Uganda is going to travel from Uganda to watch the team play.
Gentlemen,
in order for a Little League World Series to exist. You need the American teams the way they are. It wouldn't be able to do this. It's not the Olympics.
What we need to do is allow the fans and listeners to weigh in on this very important question about the Little League World Series on our Facebook page, in our chat room. Weigh in. Let us know your thoughts because we got to
Austin, you're the banker here. Let me ask you a question. How long would it last? How long would the whole thing last if we allowed more foreign teams and took away American teams. It wouldn't even be a Little League World Series. Nobody's coming from Uganda to watch their team play.
Okay, then don't do it, period, if it's just about the money.
I mean,
if we got to Brody the whole tournament, if we got to Bogart the tournament with American teams for money, then just to have an American champion. What's the point?
What's the point?
What's the point if it's just about money? Like I said, it's not fair. America has
because
America
it generates
has,
millions of dollars. It generates millions of dollars, which goes back into the community. Every penny made the Little League World Series goes to run the World Series and goes back to the Little League teams to keep
man,
kids pretty
I
much playing
man,
baseball.
I asked a simple functional question. I'm not getting down into all of that. I'm just saying it's not fair. America has a much higher percentage a chance to win this thing because they have way more teams in it than everybody else. That was my only point, man. That was my only point, and I just don't think that's fair. I understand what you're saying. It wouldn't be viable money-wise if they didn't have 16,000 American teams in it. I do get that. I get that fully.
No, I'm
just
saying that there
on a functional level,
I get that,
fair.
But on a personal level, I still think that, you know, this is our thing. I agree with you. Maybe we shouldn't just have them here at all. Then get 86 them out. I would rather 86 them out than to add more teams because we don't have any other teams.
Uncle
Robert? They do. No, what I'm saying is the American teams, this is their only shot to win a championship. The other teams have already champions when they come over here. So if we're going to do anything, let's just get rid of them like Dev said, get rid of them and just have an American thing so that the American kids have a championship to play for.
Tell them to roll. All right, man, well, let's talk about some big boy baseball. AL and NL Cy Young Awards. If the season ended right now, Jimmy, who would be your front runners, or who would you pick for the AL and the NL Cy Young Awards?
Yo, Verlander should win both of them, and he should win MVP of the league.
He said he should win both of them.
He should win both
at the same time.
But you think a pitcher can even win MVP of the league when they only playing once
no,
every 5 days? That's kind of flighting the position.
This is what it goes back to, baseball, right? Baseball will not give it to him because baseball is stuck in tradition, like I said, at every level, and that's the problem with baseball to me. But they won't give it to him. But I honestly think that a pitcher, even though he doesn't play every day, could be an MVP. If he's the most valuable player.
He's killing. He has 19 wins, but the team has 71 wins. So would that really be fair to give somebody who only had something to do with a small percentage of their wins to give them the MVP? I mean, in essence, that's what a Cy Young is. It's a pitching MVP.
I get that, but I just think that if you take him off of that team, they're not even in playoff contention. They're not even feared in the playoffs. Like, he changes everything. And that's just my opinion. To me, right now, he's the best pitcher in baseball. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But,
19-5 with a 2.28 ERA.
Come on, man.
A lot of strikeouts, 212 strikeouts.
I got to co-sign with Jimmy saying, to be honest with you, just because – it's like with the pitchers, they're so dominant sometimes. Like, I mean, to your point, Dev, it is like they played 19 or say 21 wins in a good, real good season, and the team may have won 85, so 60 games they weren't even a part of. But it's just that when they are on the team and they are on, like when they are pitching, it's like they can darn near shut down an opposing team and take complete control over the game like nothing else. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like, and this is like the year of the pitcher now, and it's becoming that in baseball. So I'm like, man,
I understand that, but it's like a dude who plays every day, who's out there playing defense, he out there with, you know, 40 home runs, 140 RBI, stuff like that. It's just, it would be hard for me.
I want to go a step further and ask y'all this question to your point. So if I'm playing in a series and Verlander, let's say we're playing a four-game or three-game series, and so I'm looking at Verlander as the opposing manager, do I change my lineups? Do I change situations in those other games? Because I know Verlander is pitching that one game. I don't know. I'm asking, is that a strategy?
You will in a playoff series. That's why they win MVP of, like, the playoffs and MVP of, you know, playoff series. Now, they fully get that because a lot of times they will win two games series. You know what I'm saying? So
baseball is funny. They only like giving the MVP to people on, like, the winningest team anyway. Like,
yeah, see, now I don't like that.
McGuire hit 70 home runs and didn't win MVP. How is that possible?
Hey, Jim, because speaking of that, like, not MVP, but if we go to Cy Young on the NL side, I think Clayton Kershaw from the Dodgers might be the front runner for that. He's 16-5, but his team stinks. The Dodgers are only 60-69. But when he plays, they win. So I wouldn't mind,
see, that,
you know.
But you know, baseball is funny too. They may not give it to him just because, yo, baseball is funny like that, man. It's like if you're
that's
the best pitcher.
Now, I know they wouldn't give the MVP to a player on a losing team, but what do you think about the pitcher? Because, like I said, since he's only played 20-something games, you know, they're a winning team when he's on the field.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. Let's take this even outside of baseball. In all those sports, do you think that a player from a losing team, even if they're by far the best player, should be able to win MVP, or does it matter sport to sport?
Yes.
I think it's sport to sport thing. I think it matters sport to sport. Now,
baseball
is one of those sports where, yeah, you know, because you know, baseball is all about stats. So if the dude's just killing you, you know, statistically, then why can't he get the MVP? But I think in basketball, one person can do so much to affect the game. So even if you drop the numbers,
people.
Team sucks, you're not doing enough to lift your team. Shout out to LeBron.
but he's one of the, yo. How about in football? What if you're like, you know, a great player, you're putting up crazy stats, but your defense stinks and your team's continuously losing?
So what you're asking is, what if you're Barry Sanders?
That's a hard question.
Hey, Barry got jerked out of his. See, Barry should have won, but because his team was losing, they gave it to Farce.
I think in football, I would lean more towards a player being able to do that. Because, like you said, if you're carrying a team and your offense don't stink and then your defense go out there and give up 50 points a game, that has no bearing on it, you know?
But here's another way to look at it, too. If you look at the award in the true sense of its definition and you say, okay, this player is the most valuable to this team. Now, if a player is good, right, a great player, but the team stinks, like, how do you quantify his value if he even with him, they're going to lose anyway. Like, so say you take him off the team and they still lose, it's hard to quantify his value because they might still be garbage, but they might lose by more without him on the team. You know what I'm saying? So it's hard to, like.
You can weigh, what you're saying then is you can weigh competitiveness. Without this player, they're not competitive. With this player, they are competitive. Look at the Lions. Without Megatron and the quarterback, Bull, Stafford, are they competitive?
Yeah, in our chat room,
the Joker said that he thinks that Mike Schmidt may have won MVP for a last-place team. We got to check that out. But I know that it generally doesn't happen that much, that a player from a losing team wins the award.
Plus, baseball has a three-figure year history, you know, 100-plus.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it happens every
once in
a while, it really doesn't.
And John, what's up? Shout out to John. He also says, kind of what Dev said, he thinks the Cy Young is just as distinguished as being an MVP.
Yeah, I think it's just they have to separate it because those guys don't really play much. So it's like pitching MVP versus playing MVP. I mean, if they would just go ahead and say that, then it wouldn't be as much confusion. But I think Verlander and maybe Kershaw. Anybody got anybody different before we move on?
You just I'm waiting for somebody to drop a homer name. Where's the homer names at, yo?
Brent got a call. Brent got a call.
Brent gave an Cy Young to Doc Holliday before the season started.
All right, so Jimmy posted a situation on a topic on our Facebook page the other day about Manny Pacquiao. Being, well, go ahead, Jimmy. You can explain it real quick. What did his manager say?
His trainer, legendary trainer, you know, he says on the he's being interviewed.
Freddie Roach? Is it Freddie Roach?
Yeah, Freddie Roach was saying that Pac-Man's going to be fighting for a while, he said, because Pac-Man is broke. And it's kind of like he was, like, not sending a shot, but he was trying to get through to him. Because the way he said it, it sounded as if He'd been having talks to him, but Pac-Man doesn't get it. And he was saying that Pac-Man takes care of a lot of people. His entourage is crazy when he travels to these fights because he brings so many people from his home country. But he's kind of calling him, like, too generous. That, you know, a lot of things that athletes and entertainers deal with when they start to get money, they know how to cut people off. So the way Freddie Roach was saying it is, like, he was dropping facts, but he was also, like, sending, like, shots at him, like, yo, listen to what I'm saying. Like, you're going broke. You don't have any money. He said basically he's going to have to fight for a lot more years in order to sustain his lifestyle.
I thought he had millions of heats. Hey, but Jimmy,
that's what I said.
Hey, what you just said, I don't know. It's starting to make sense to me, because I went to a Pacquiao fight at Mandalay Bay. And that's a nice-size arena. And a lot of that crowd were Filipinos. I didn't really know they had that many Filipinos in America. So he might have brought all of them over here for the fight.
Ah! Yo, they was in the crowd talking about sometimes when we touch.
Like holding hands.
Like, he brought like 15,000 people over.
You know, it's funny, the dynamic, when you see those two guys train, when you see Manny Pacquiao's training camps, like, the dynamic between Freddie Roach and him is strange, because Freddie Roach is always frustrated during their camp, because Manny has so many things going on. And it's like I feel like every time or everything that I see, it's Freddie Roach telling them, look, you need to put more time in on the bag, on the speed bag. You need to put more road work in. He's like, no, I got to be at a meeting. I got to do this. I got to go to the studio and cut my record. So it's like Manny has a whole lot going on. And it's like Freddie Roach, I feel like in all his interviews, he's always like, he always has the I told you so mentality in regards to Manny Pacquiao. Like, well, he needs to be in the gym right now, but he doesn't want to do it. So it's just interesting. Now he's coming out with that, like, and the guy's going and saying that the guy's going broke. So,
yo,
Manny Pacquiao,
I think that he honestly thinks he could be better than what he is. Like it's one of them things where he has so much going on. But Freddie Roach probably sees it like, yo, this dude has the ability to be better, but he's spread thin.
Right. He out there at shuffleboard tournament.
From what PJ just said, I'm thinking, when it happens, I ain't even going to say if, when it happens, when Manny get his boot stretched, Roach probably going to stand over on the ring like I told you.
like, I told you this was going to happen.
Real quick,
I told you, stop playing.
The Joker came back with the information in the chat room. He says Smith didn't win an MVP for a last-place team, but Steve Carlton did win a Cy Young for a last-place Phillies team in 1972. So that's kind of along the lines
like,
of how we
he's playing out, letting them K's out.
So there is hope for Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, no doubt.
He deserves
no doubt,
it because
no
like, that's a situation where they only win when dude is on the mound. They garbage. All right, so I was about to say non-sports story, but since we're talking about boxing, let's talk about Muhammad Ali. I mean, Will Smith. There was rumors earlier this week that Will and Jada were getting separated. They were on the outs, and then they came out with a statement the next day saying that it wasn't true. So what have you heard?
They got too much money to get divorced. That'd have messed the money all up. And I heard that Jada was giving it up, the cockles up to Mark Anthony.
There was a rumor that Will walked in. They didn't say he walked in on him smanging or nothing, but they said he came home, you know, as a surprise and dude was in his house. They didn't put any details after that, so I don't know what he was doing. But
Will and Jada can't get divorced, man. They the last hope for Hollywood. Like, everybody been assuming that them two would get divorced. I think they've been married since, like, 96, 97. I think everybody has been like, yo, they got to be getting divorced soon. My man, I saw an interview with Will the other day. He was like, I went into the situation and I told Jada, divorce is not an option. Hey, we just got to work it out. So my man, and they both seem real adamant about that. Like, yo, divorce is not an option. Like, even if we got to go smash other people, if we got to rumble each other, if we got to cuss each other out, we're not getting divorced.
Yo, he probably caught her and she gave him a couple hall passes or something. And that's what happened. But I think it's promotion for Will's new album coming out. He said he'd come back to be a rapper again.
Hey, but Jimmy, the funny thing about the whole situation is how so many people were saddened by it when the rumor came out the other day.
Yo,
like people really hold on to this.
They do. You know, because, yo, think about it. Like, yo, in terms of the public, you know, people were acting like Barack and Michelle broke up.
I mean, but, yo, when you look at it as far as black couples are concerned, I mean, who else can you think of taking the president,
couple too.
taking the first family out of it? You know, who do we think of?
James and Florida.
Well, B. Austin, that's what I always tell people, like, first of all, I don't believe in Hollywood love. So nobody, even Will and Jada getting divorced will not surprise me. You know what I'm saying? We were talking about this the other day, and out of everybody in Hollywood that's ever been married, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more, but the only people we could come up with who made it for the long haul was Ruby Dee and Ozzy.
Yeah.
James and Florida.
They didn't do the right thing.
That was
Ashford and Simpson.
Or die,
Ashford and Simpson, James and Florida.
Ashford and
Asher, I thought Asher and Simpson had some problems. I thought they had some problems. I thought they separated.
Nah, they stuck together. They stuck it out.
Oh, sure. Well, their names had different last names. So there's something suspect about that. And even Ruby Key and Ossie. Remember when Ossie was found dead? He was found dead in a hotel by himself. So they could have.
Stop pooping on that man's memory.
I don't believe. And it's not about him. I just don't believe in Hollywood love, man. It's not real.
What about Johnny Gill and Eddie Murphy?
Now see, they might be the longest lasting one. They might be the most successful Hollywood couple of them all.
Rip you the right way, so
Bobby and Whitney. Yo, Bobby and Whitney lasted for a long time. They probably were like too high to do the paperwork or something, but they lasted for a while.
Yeah.
Yo, and the thing is, like, for me, I was shocked when they broke up because, like, crackheads generally don't break up. Like, crackheads in the hood will be together forever, yo. They hang together.
Yeah, they do.
Like, they go hard.
I know, because they're too high to do it. Like, man, it's just...
Those that smoke together stay together.
If more couples was on crack, the divorce rate would decrease.
There you go. So it does have a positive use.
All right, but NBA news, man. I know China... They actually, they're blocking NBA players from signing with Chinese teams if they're already under contract. So you can scratch the Kobe Bryants and the LeBron Jameses and people like that going to China. So if you're a free agent, you can sign with China.
I support that initiative.
Because basically what they're doing, they don't want to allow people to just bolt from China as soon as the lockout is over. So
yeah,
if you sign a contract with them for the 1 year contract, you gotta play the season out with them. See, I think that's cool.
I support that initiative like I support fried rice.
Yo, I support that, think about how their league stats and championships will be affected, like catch it, jump in real quick. Yo, and looking back in the history of their league, they'd be like, what happened this year? This team usually stinks. Like, you know, and also that way I don't have to hear all these crazy stories about these players going to play over there all week long.
Yeah. No, but that's I think that's. I mean, they're looking out for themselves because.
And so I got another. I got a question for y'all on the other side of that though, Dev. Look at this. So FIBA is allowing it to go down. So are they cheapening their product for their fans by allowing these guys to just come through basically and have a pickup run and get a couple hundred thousand in a pickup run and then roll?
I would say.
Hey,
so.
Real quick. I think. I was gonna say, Dev. I think, well, with China being a socialist slash communist nation, and most of the FIBA places being more capitalist slash socialist, China's like, look, no, these are our rules. You're not gonna play us just so you can make some money and then bounce. And we have Chinamen over here that have been working hard. You're not gonna take their jobs, and we're not gonna keep them on hold to leave. So they're like, you know, get out of here, NBA guys.
We take our basketball seriously. We've looked at the Street Magazine, Dime Magazine. We beat up the Georgetown Hoyas. We take this serious, yo. We take this run of basketball.
Chili had to call him Chinaman, though. But
I blame Georgetown for this. If Georgetown would have did what they had to do, then they wouldn't have made this rule.
That rule did come out the day after they whooped Georgetown's ass.
Yeah.
It was like, yo, these boys soft. We don't even want them over here.
They start them dudes out.
And to answer Austin's question, I think it does cheapen a little bit because, first of all, they're going to come over there. A lot of those teams are going to get better, and then they're going to fall off before the playoffs come because the NBA players, you know, bolted back to America to get their real checks. So they'll have like a windfall of financial success, and then it's going to be back to normal. So they kind of, you know, they kind of getting their mail on. They're going to dumb it down to double their dollars.
Double their dollars.
Yeah. And so, all right. So, keeping it with the off season basketball, real quick. You know, this past Saturday in D.C., you had the Goodman League versus the Drew League. So that's the the top league in D.C. versus the top summer league, pro-am league in L.A. And the D.C. team, led by Kevin Durant's 44, this dude dropping numbers all over the place this summer, they beat the L.A. team by 1 point. And, of course, again, at the end of the game, because you know Kobe didn't come. We spoke about that last week. Like, Kobe ain't going nowhere. he ain't traveling to do this. So they're trying to do a rematch in L.A. so they can get Kobe to play on the team.
As long as they don't go to San Francisco, somebody's going to get shot if they do.
The essays don't play up there.
Yeah, San Francisco trying to change that view that we have of them. They're trying to get all hard.
Yeah, they don't want us to think they all man fans.
So they're homosexual cover.
As long as they got my man Rapping Forte involved with an S-curl, it can't be hard.
Well, Brandon Jennings led the Drew League 34 points, and Harden, he had 29 points, but he could have won the game late, and Kevin Durant smacked his shot, made him double clutch. He got scared. So that's 2 weeks in a row where at the end of the game, Harden did something wrong.
Well, Harden from Philly anyway. I don't care what nobody say. He ain't from out there. He from Philly.
Looking at his beard.
He from out there when he lose like that.
Yeah, no doubt they got him.
Did y'all hear about
I heard. Hey, yo, with Kobe, I heard I got some scoop from Omar who's out there in L.A. He was saying that when Kobe showed up and was going at Harden, Kobe was expecting for LeBron, who was doing a camp in L.A., to be at that game on the other team. But it just so happened that LeBron didn't show up. So, like, Kobe was trying to, you know, scratch
that
itch.
Imagine that.
Full skirt. But did y'all hear about the Mary Jane incident at Zach Randolph's house? His home got searched. His Oregon home got searched by police because a dude who went to his house to sell them weed was beaten with a pool cue over a dispute about his weed prices. Yo, when did this kind of stuff go to the police? They beat the dude up because his prices were too high. He said Zach wasn't one of the dudes that beat him up. But, yo, really? He went to the cops.
Yo,
he must have had that nice Kush, boy. He was trying to get top dollar. He had that weed you can't F with. They call that the AC Green. Anyway, but your man Zach Randolph, man, he's another one of these dudes that don't know how to cut off certain, like, you know, a certain type person, man. He still got his hood homies with him. He always staying some ish. He was selling weight a couple of years ago. What's going on with Zach, man?
Yo, so they beat the dude down with a pool stick because his prices were too high. I was thinking, you know, man, somebody else was talking on our Facebook page. He might have been coming from the East Coast, so he was trying to add his traveling expenses on top of the cost of the weed.
Yeah,
he wasn't trying
man,
to add
that's
that.
Crazy, man.
But when did going to the police because your drug deal didn't go right, when did that become a part of the situation?
I guess Nicky Barnes and
Alpo and all them set the tone.
Well, hold on, Dad. You said they beat him with a pool stick?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did him like God. Think about it. Think about it.
So, now hold up. Does anybody know how much Zach Randolph made last year? Because really,
you
like,
got a nice check at the end of the year, though.
That's what I'm saying. Like, come on, man. Is it really that big of a difference in the deal? I mean, I got it. He made $17.6 million last year. Come on, man.
He must have been trying to buy a truck.
No, it don't matter. That, just because my man made $17 don't mean that he want to pay $600, $700 an ounce. He want a deal like everybody else.
Fair.
Want to get it for like $350.
Hey, yo, check this out. So far, Zach Randolph has made $90 million in the NBA so far. I didn't know that.
Damn, I didn't know that either.
Hey, yo, the dude who came by to sell the stuff was telling them, like, yo, this ain't Delancey Street, and you ain't about to Jew me down. All right, so last thing before we get into this football topic, man. I want to know. I know where Austin was. Austin was in flight on his way back from Cabo, so he missed all the action. PJ, where were you on Tuesday? Where were you on Tuesday when this East Coast earthquake hit?
Yo, I was in the office working. I was in the office working because, and the building started crip walking. It was shaking from side to side, and I thought it was some construction going on. So I'm on the second floor. So I looked out, and I ain't see no construction vehicles. And by this time, the building was leaning. So I hauled ass down the steps. And right by the time I got to the door, that joint stopped. And I was like, chill, you know, talk to coworkers and all that. Everybody was like, yo, y'all know what that was? And I was like, yeah. And it's funny, and I'm not trying to be smart, but in my office, like, it felt like the rumbling was coming from the ceiling, the roof. Every one of the Caucasian coworkers were headed north, up the steps, to the source of the rumbling, while all, I repeat, all of the African-American coworkers, including myself, were making beelines to exit signs and ground. I mean, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know if all these comedians are correct, but I'm going to tell you something. There was a segregated workforce, and the blacks was out. The whites,
yo,
investigating.
Hey, let's see what happened.
Hey, PJ, speaking of, like, stuff that comedians say, I was talking to my brother-in-law the other day, and he said he didn't know what was going on, but he saw somebody running, so he just started running.
Exactly.
We don't even know everything about
Cedric the Entertainer. We don't need no run coordinator. Look, Cedric said we don't need no run coordinator. Look, you with me and you running, well, God dog it, I'm running too.
Where were you, Jimmy?
I was sitting on my MacBook writing for the blog, the best blog, warrensports.com/blog. At any rate, I was writing, and my building don't like the Cupid Shuffle. So I ain't gonna lie, I was shook. I'm gonna tell you why I was shook. Like, I'm from Philly, so I don't think of an earthquake. I say, yo, did a plane hit a building? You know what I'm saying? If I heard gunshots, I'd have been better prepared. I'm used to that in Philadelphia, but I'm not used to my building doing a Cupid Shuffle. So I got out of flight. What's funny to me is when cats run out of a building and they stand right underneath the building. What the hell is that?
Yo, that's exactly.
If the building's crumbling, you don't walk out and just stand and start looking up. You get down the block somewhere, then look back.
Exactly. I was wondering, like, what the hell are people doing?
I'm sitting around, and the building that I was in starts shaking. You know, I was doing some research for the show. And I kind of rolled my chair out to the middle of the room that I was in because it looked like stuff was going to start falling off the shelves. So I just rolled the chair out to the middle of the floor and, like, spread my arms out so I can, like, block stuff if it started falling on me. So I look out the window, and, you know, the building I was in, there was, like, a little high-rise building right across the street. And I look out the window, and I just see people haul-assing out that building. There's just people just running. And I had no idea what was going on. I kind of, you know, by the time it was over, you kind of realize what just happened. But, you know, that kind of stuff doesn't happen here, so... It was weird, and that's what kind of made me mad later on in the day because, you know, Facebook, the news, all of that stuff was flooded with people from the West Coast laughing at everybody's reaction of, you know, the earthquake. But, you know, that stuff doesn't happen over here. Like, our buildings and structures over here aren't even built the same way as theirs because we're not used to that kind of stuff. So you can laugh all you want. But I don't have earthquake insurance at my crib. So when my house starts cracking and stuff like that, you know, who's going to pay for that? And I made an analogy to them, like, okay, if you grew up in the suburbs, the squeaky clean suburbs all your life, and then your neighbor gets shot, and I tell you, I start laughing at you and tell you to stop bitching because where I grew up at, my neighbors got shot every other day. Am I wrong for telling them that? Because that's how they
get
act.
Shot every day, B.
Exactly. They were acting just because they have earthquakes, like they welcome earthquakes. Like FOH, you're going to tell me you like it when your crib starts shaking? So, you know, you can laugh all you want.
Yo, and this goes out to the West Side. I was in the air as this was happening, coming back from South America. I had made a Zach Randolph run. And when we landed for our layover in Phoenix, shout out to the land of the sun, Steve Nash is leaving. So we landed in Phoenix and turned our phones on, and immediately all of these text messages and alerts start coming in. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? I got like 12. My wife got like 40. And so we like, what are y'all talking about?
More people love her than love you. That's what I get out of the story.
True.
Yeah. All right, but yeah, that's what happened. And, you know, in a few weeks, we're going to have our anniversary show. We recap our year, so, you know, maybe we can talk a little more about this or if something else crazy happened. B. Austin, you mentioned that aftershock at 1 a.m. this morning. I slept through that, so it was
cool. I was there, started rumbling and rolling, and I was like, ooh, fun.
Oh, did it? I didn't even
really?
Know that.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, the aftershock, since it wasn't as big as the other thing, I don't know if it went that far up because, you know, the epicenter was, like, down in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
In that area.
Okay, got you.
So I don't know if an aftershock would have made it all the way up to Philly, but
it
rocked.
I know Irene is on her way now. Irene coming to talk to us a little bit.
Hey,
Irene came back at us this morning. She spat at us earlier.
This son been alive for a month, and the boy about to go through an earthquake, a hurricane.
Yo, 2012 is approaching,
man. He might get one good year of life, and then.
Shout out to Cam.
Yeah, they said my son was in nursery school talking about the monsters are coming.
All right, Jimmy, let's talk. Let's get into this NFL. We got big preseason games going on tonight.
No doubt. Before I get into it real quick, anybody want to call in 323-410-0012 and press 1 if you want to talk to us. But let's talk some football. All right? Now, let me ask you guys, though, was the Eagles-Steelers game, Bears-Giants game, you know, several preseason games happened since last we talked. Did you guys see anything that stood out to you? You know, Eagles defense, you know what I mean, Bears offense, anything stand out to you, good or bad?
Well, the Eagles defense damn sure didn't stand out to me. They got raked
in.
Yo, I heard that Mike Vick had three spectacular completions to a Pennsylvania team other than ours.
Just the wrong team.
Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow.
No, he was getting his Wiz Khalifa on.
But, you know, I didn't. You know what we heard all week, though, you know, the offensive line wasn't doing this and the offensive line wasn't doing that. Nobody can just admit when Mike Vick makes a mistake. Like, that's weird to me.
Right? Well, I tell you what, man. It's alarming to me. And I like Mike Vick as much as any Eagles fan, and maybe not as much as – I might like him as much as the BPs, but I'm much more objective. The thing about Michael Vick is this is going – we can pick up all these free agents and shore up all these other positions except for linebacker, as Brad told us about a month ago. But – The Eagles train begins and ends with Michael Vick. And I don't know if it was the Vikings or the Bears, but somebody realized that Michael Vick has exotic problems trying to read blitzes. And to me, it looked like he was having that same problem last week. And I don't know what it takes. I mean, I don't know if he just doesn't have the acumen of the upper echelon quarterbacks mentally. But if he can't pick those blitzes up, as much as this is a copycat league, the Eagles are in trouble. I don't give a darn if we bring Asamoah and Revis here. We're in trouble if Michael Vick can't read these daggone blitzes. I mean, it's more than that, but that's
comes,
like the main thing.
When the blitz comes, Mike Vick looks like, Massa coming, put me back on plantation.
But you know what, Austin? It's like all his life he was – he's just used to, you know, if the blitz
comes. He's been a read and run. It's a single read, half field, and I'm going to just get out of here.
Last year he did a better job of, you know, under a little bit of duress, he stuck with his progressions a little bit. But he admitted himself during the, you know, before people, you know, started calling us with all the hate calls and emailing us with the hate mail, he admitted himself. The biggest thing he had to work on throughout the offseason was recognizing where the pressure was coming from, but he didn't really get to do that because he couldn't have contact with his coaches throughout the offseason, which to me is not really an excuse.
And also keep in mind that he was playing the Steelers, who were one of the best blitzing teams, and the Steelers look like they in preseason form. Like, yo, Big Ben looked he's looking sharp. Yo, he looked like he lost weight. And he looked like his, you know what I mean, throwing the tight spirals. I'm like, yo, made every read. I'm like, this boy look nice.
Yeah,
I'm surprised.
Kind of
with
DJ,
locker room.
Oh, yeah. Because we kind of really don't know, because Mike Vick has never had a year as a passer like he had last year. And as we spoke about last week, he even tailed off at the end of last year. It's just the BP just didn't notice that.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh, yeah.
We're just hoping
thrown
that
around
he doesn't
like a rag
regress.
I'm
just hoping that he doesn't regress back to the Atlanta Mike Vick, because though a lot of lay fans think that Atlanta Mike Vick was good, that dude is not invited to this party. So
he's not
true.
What will be interesting to me is if he does regress and Kevin Cobb like goes crazy, I want to see where all the haters of Kevin Cobb what they do, like, because watching him play, I mean, then again, he is playing with Fitzgerald. He's looking sharp too, but you know, it's going to be an interesting season, and I can't wait to
quarterback is quarterback. I think in most cases, quarterbacks make wide receivers look better. You know, more.
I mean,
so
this is true. But you saw a couple of Jones, he just threw it up. A couple of them Jones,
last
he just threw it up.
Even though
his
you can do that when you got a Fitzgerald. But
it's sort of like Sanchez. Sanchez just threw it up, and Plax couldn't do what Plax does.
Oh yeah, it's going to be catches like that throughout every game. There's going to be times when the receiver does make the quarterback look better. But receiver, like we always talk about, is such a dependent position. Like, you really can't do jack as a receiver if somebody ain't throwing you
the ball. Any of you guys see the other game, the Bears-Giants game? Because I had two observations from that game. One real fast is that Eli Manning looked like he doesn't like football at all, yo. Like, his body language is hilarious to me because although I do think he's a good quarterback, dude looks like he don't want to play ever. But the Bears, I think that people don't realize just how bad they're going to be affected by this kicking situation, because they have two of the best kick returners in Knox and the boy Hester, and like they're completely like taken out of the game.
Yeah.
And if you take the kicking game away, Devin Hester has very little value other than being able to run to the water real fast and get back and bring his teammates water. Like, he has no value.
Down pass.
He has no value as a receiver. He has no value as a receiver. Johnny Knox is a little bit more valuable.
But I mean, he'd have a little bit of value if he can catch the team in, like, a zero coverage, because the dude's not going to run with
him. Or on a couple reverses or something. But what I'm saying is, like,
that's
if you look at when they were winning, they won despite their offense a lot of times. Their defense and special teams won, you know what I mean, won games for them. And they're completely taking them out. So I think out of every team, they're going to be more effective than even Cleveland with Chris, because Cleveland stinks anyway. But just watching that game, I'm like, damn, that's crazy. They can't move the ball because Cutler, you know, is acting all stupid. So they're going to be in trouble.
Speaking of Eli, though, I did notice a few times in that game, like, you know, he came to the line, and the Bears had to change on several plays what they were doing defensively, because he actually came to the line, recognized what was about to happen, called it out, and made the Bears shift out of what they were doing.
He's a man.
Young Peyton.
He's a man.
Peyton probably beat him up, forced him into the film room.
Eli doesn't hate the face. I don't think Eli doesn't like playing. I just think he wanted them hate the face dudes, just like Cutler. I think both of those dudes just have a demeanor and a posture that's very,
to me,
like,
it's hilarious, though.
Whimpering. Like, it's almost like, gosh, man, why I got to be here? But, I mean, they don't feel like that. I mean, they choose to be football players. So, I mean, I think they just have those faces.
From what I see with Eli, he may be average, maybe a little disinterested in quarters 1 through 3, but he is definitely the antithesis of McNaught in quarter number 4, because he balls out when the pressure is on. And a part of that, that's like, think about all the people that you see that make the autistic face. And you can look at him. You can look at Jay Cutler a little bit, and then you can look at Flip.
Yeah.
Yo, Flip is emotionless when the pressure is on. Emotionless.
I don't know, man.
I
kind of took the defense of Jay Cutler, you know, during that playoff game last year. It's because it's hard for me to, because I've tried to do that before. You know, we always do that, but I've learned to stop trying to read people's body language, because people are just different, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was kind of hard for me to believe. That's probably why I took his plight a little bit. It was hard for me to believe that Jay Cutler would quit, because I've seen dude get run over by trucks throughout the whole season and keep getting up. That's why it was kind of hard for me to believe that.
For me, it was like, for me, though, it was a total opposite. I've seen him quit before, and also he probably was like, enough is enough, because they definitely didn't protect him. Like, to defend him a little bit, like, he was getting beat up.
Yeah. I just never questioned his toughness, because he's on the ground a lot. And his sack, you know, he gets some Dominican Sue type sacks.
That's right. He's like, yo, he like, I'm tired of this, man. Damn. Yo, real quick, the three Eagles fans on the phone, let me ask you a question. What are you looking to see from the starters tonight, if anything, real quick?
I'm looking to see a little bit of improvement from the young linebacking core, because if something doesn't happen by tonight, they might have to look somewhere to make some type of move. Of course, we're looking for an improved game from Mike Vick. And I don't know. I guess we're trying to see if the front four can keep some consistent pressure on the QB. You know, we got those guys back there in the secondary now, but we still have some inexperienced safeties. And Kurt Coleman is not good. Nate Allen can be good, but he's still young. So, you know, I'm looking to see if they can keep some consistent pressure so these guys don't have to cover as long as they have to cover.
Yeah, and Nate Allen is actually not starting tonight. It's, I forgot the guy's name that's starting in place of him, but it's the guy that he's in direct competition with. So it's basically, I forgot his name. I don't even know where he's from. I just heard his name today, but I know that they said that it's not Nate Allen's job for sure, because they want to see this other guy. And, like, everything that Dev said is pretty much what I want to see as well. I just want to see Vic improvement. I want to see what we're doing at linebackers, and I want to see some improvement out of the safeties. We're not going to see anything from special teams except for the punt game. So we'll see. I will see, man. I need Vic.
We
got
to make sure our touchback game is on point, though.
I know. Jokic was taking it out like 11 yards deep, though, and it's drawn only 10 deep. Jokic was out of bounds trying to run it back through.
Yo,
just so that they can get it in play.
Who the hell is our kicker? Isn't his last name Henry or something? Well, who is our kicker?
Yeah, he's a our kicker is a rookie, I think. Isn't he a rookie?
I don't know his name,
but I believe he's a rookie, and I think our punter is like a rookie, isn't he? It's not Raka back there.
I don't think I like the same last name or something, or am I thinking about another team?
I think they do have the same last. There's something in common about our punter and kicker, but
yeah,
I don't know what it is. It could be the last name,
Jimmy,
or it could be that they're both young.
Jimmy, I'm praying to Allah, Nebuchadnezzar, and the three wise men that somehow Ray Lewis can make it up 95 and we make that deal. Because we spent a lot of money on the secondary, and as y'all know, but maybe our fans don't, the D-line protects the linebackers protect the corners and secondary. If you don't have good linebackers, that means you're going to see millions and millions of dollars coming up to make tackles. And that's not why we paid them millions and millions of dollars. So hopefully some light goes off in our backs' heads and they ball some. I don't know that that's going to happen. Looking for some continuity in the secondary. I think that what they end up doing is we'll play a lot of press man and allow our safeties to have a lot less responsibilities and coverage. So that hopefully will be pretty good for them. Offense, I'm looking for Mike Vic to make a read, man. See a blitz, make a read, and hit a hot route. See the blitz, make a read, hit a hot route.
Hey, Eagles fans, do y'all think the three interceptions was an aberration, or you think that Mike Vic really has regressed?
I wouldn't say he's regressed.
I thought he regressed a little bit at the end of last season. You know, we pointed at Giants game, which was an amazing situation. But if you look at the first 3.5 quarters of that Giants game, he nor the rest of the offense did jack. So
he's not good enough as a passer. He's not good enough as a passer yet to have gone through a whole summer with no work and be able to recognize things. So I'm not going to say it's regression. I'm just going to say that he's rusty, because he's not participated in any real quarterback activities. He's probably kept himself in tremendous shape, done some running, but how hard is it for a monkey to run? You know, but as far as thinking the game, it's going to take him some time to really see things. He needs to get a little bit extra work, and I'll make a decision on his regression or lack thereof probably by week three, week four.
I think part of his regression last year was a was a combination of, like Jimmy was saying, one, him getting beat up, and another part of, and then trying to rely on his feet like he used to in Atlanta, and also the fact that the defense is kind of like said, oh, this is how you beat this guy, and they kept throwing it at him, and he couldn't, like, change it. Like, I think he caught a lot of people off guard last year. He caught a lot of defenses off guard because going into the season, it was Kevin Cobb's offense. So he essentially got thrown into it, and then they tweaked some things for him. So once the other defenses in the league got wind of, oh, this is what he can, this is how you stop him, then I think it was all, you know, the floodgates were open. So I don't know if he regressed from last year to this year. So to Kill's question, I don't know if he regressed from the end of last year even worse based on those three interceptions today. I mean, I'm sorry, last Thursday. I think he might still be at what he was last year, though, like at the end of the year, because the defenses have woken up, and I don't know if he can keep countered that yet. I don't know if he has a counter punch for that right now.
I'll say this real quick so Jimmy can move on. Not even about regression. I'll just answer it like this. He's not a three-interception quarterback, so we shouldn't get used to that, because this isn't even a three-interception system. Like, a lot of those throws, I think, you know, Andy Reid tried to show off a little bit in the preseason just to see what we can do as an offense. But, you know, Andy Reid will scale the offense back where the throws won't be as risky and they won't be as dangerous. So don't get used to him throwing a bunch of picks. But, you know, I don't know what he's going to do on the positive side.
Moving on, though, let me ask you guys a question. Did you guys see Plax in his first game back?
Yeah, he looked pretty decent. He looked pretty decent.
Yeah, he did look pretty good.
He looked pretty decent considering where he's come from. I mean, you know, that much time off. He looked pretty decent.
He didn't look all that rusty. He said he felt like he was running slow, but when the play ended up, he was where he was supposed to be. So, you know, he probably played in the longest yard league while he was in there. So he got
longest yard league.
It reminds me like with quarterbacks when they got plaques, bro, they get in trouble. They just straight throw it up.
Just need to stop getting hurt in practice. He would get hurt every other day in practice, though.
What's up with your man Tiki Barber? Nobody wants him. A couple of the people that gave him a trial said that he actually looked good, but yet nobody wants to sign him.
you know who beat him out for a job in Miami? Larry Johnson. I thought he was dead.
Larry Johnson.
He let Larry Johnson beat him up.
LJ.
That's the thing. We might not be able to say he let Larry Johnson beat him up. I mean, beat him out. I think it might have something to do with teams being afraid to affect their chemistry. Tiki is like public enemy number one in football player circles now.
Players usually take up the players.
But he didn't know. That's what he did. He went against players and threw everybody under the bus. I don't think anybody wants to play with him. He's probably still talented enough to get a job. But the players, like, what did the dude say last week, Jimmy? He going to come in there and vomit on the locker room.
Yeah. It's probably not worth it. It's probably not worth the effect, the negative effect that he can, like, put in a locker room. His performance probably doesn't outplay that. In other words, it's not that the reward,
you know,
probably not good enough in terms of where he's at 36 years old.
I guess Reggie Bush and Larry Johnson could be a pretty formidable combination since it's a two-back.
The old Larry Johnson.
The old LJ used to run like Marion Barber or something.
Yeah,
What's your thoughts on Terrell Pryor being drafted in the third round of supplemental draft by the Raiders? Do you think he'll play this season at all? Will he make an impact with the Raiders?
I know y'all going to laugh because I'm the combine stat dude, but I didn't know that dude was a 4.43, yo.
Brad, I'm going to let you finish, but I just got to say this. When I saw that number, I thought immediately about Brad. Like, yo, I know Brad just got hyped because he's 6'3", 230 or something like that, and he ran a 4.3. Yeah, he's 6'5", 235, something like that. He ran a 4.3.
I know why. At this point, I know why Al Davis drafted him, because he didn't even look at anything else other than his 40 time.
That's what he does. It's not even a joke. The last three drafts, I think the fastest person in the draft went to the Raiders.
Yo, that yo, used to work back in the 70s, son. Like, when you don't realize that can't work no more.
Yo, he was a track coach in his life before this.
Hayward Bay was like the 70th best receiver in that draft. They took dude in the first round because he was the fastest player in the draft. I don't think they look at game film. I don't think they have a VCR or a DVD or a Blu-ray.
There was one point in time where that used to work.
With
but
Tim
everybody
Brown,
is caught up
James,
to that.
Back like, with Willie Gault.
When
guys
no
like Willie Gault was world-class sprinters.
Because everybody's fast now. But they just want to take the fastest time.
Darryl Green.
They want to take the 4.2 instead of the 4.4, and to do with 4.2 speed has no skills whatsoever.
My question is this.
Right.
All I'm going to say real quick is, what's the 40 times of the top, like, five quarterbacks in the, you know, what are the 40
Tom
times
Brady
of the top five
quarterbacks?
Tom
Brady has the slowest
40
time in the history of the combine.
That's my point. Like, I don't understand.
Brady had like
a five.
He a top 3 to 5 quarterback of all time. Some people think he the best.
Aaron Rodgers is fast for a quarterback, though. Aaron Rodgers is fast. So is Steve Young. Aaron Rodgers is faster than Patrick Crean.
Is he?
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, all I want to know
that
about
my point is that doesn't mean nothing. That was my point, though.
My whole point on Terrell Pryor is, I hope he sees a barber, because, yo, that boy need a cut.
A lot of people. He need to bring 90 with him.
Speaking of his impact real quick, I don't know if he's going to have much of an impact. So, unless
I don't either. I see that.
Need to turn into a receiver or something.
You think the boy
do you think that's,
the,
do you think that's what their intentions are?
They might.
The Raiders.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on, though. The next thing I want to talk about is this. Kyle Orton has been named the starter of my Denver Broncos. I want to get you guys' opinion before I give mine. What's your opinion on the whole Orton situation?
That's what it's supposed
I think we talked about this before. I mean, he knows the system better. He knows all the checks and reads down to the fifth degree. He probably also knows the audibles, can command the team better. But, you know, Tebow is a fiery guy. He obviously probably goes harder than Orton out there on the field, but the coach feels as though, yo, I'm trying to win. I don't have time for not a science project, but a project just to see, hey, can we win with Tebow? Like, somebody said that Tebow should be on a bad team where he can just play through all his mistakes and become a better quarterback that way.
As if the Broncos are good. We are a bad team. That's what my problem is. But, Claire, I'll get to that. Dev, what's your opinion?
My opinion is, I don't even know why that was a story, because I thought it was a done deal that Orton was a starting quarterback from summertime, from the jump.
No doubt. How about you, Austin?
Orton balled. I mean, Orton's a baller. I like him. He's not the most talented, doesn't have the strongest arm, makes the reads, very accurate. He's a good quarterback. I mean, he's like a Matt Hasselbeck. He's quality.
Okay.
So,
PJ, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with Dev, Brad, and Kill said, basically. I mean,
okay. Well, here's my
they're saying Tebow, Jimmy, is battling for the second spot with, what's the name, right?
Yeah, I heard that. But here's my point. My point is this, though. You know what Kyle Orton is. He's not a great player. I mean, he's an above-average quarterback. But at the end of the day, are you going to win with him? No. So if your goal is to win the championship, not saying that Tebow will win the championship, but you need to give an opportunity to see if he can play. If he can't play, get rid of him, period. But at the end of the day, Kyle Orton, as people say, he gives you the best chance to win. Kyle Orton was 3-11 last year. People forget he put up numbers, but they lost. Like, he won 3 games.
Yeah, but he didn't.
Now,
but you
won 3
Jimmy,
games.
Jimmy,
he didn't,
20,
he didn't do that.
21 other players.
No,
yeah,
I get that, but what I'm saying is you're not going to win regardless. What I'm saying is you're not going to win regardless. I Kill said he could be on the bad. The team is bad. We're not competing for a championship. So with that being said, I would rather, like, I'm not saying Tebow is the answer. Maybe bring somebody else in. But at the end of the day, if you were going to trade the dude, you should have traded him. How do you want to dangle him as bait, then don't trade him, then name him the starter? But people
are asking. But you know what,
Jimmy? What's that?
Everything you said is true, but the coach is competing for his job.
He's
not really trying to pacify. He's not really trying to pacify the quarterback, because Tim Tebow wasn't his man in the first place.
So now I have to question Elway and people running the show. Like,
Exactly.
Or what is your goal? Is your goal just to be an average team, or is the goal to get back to being a championship team?
Jimmy,
exactly.
You got to remember, John Fox, he took the Panthers, they won like two games one year, then the next year, something like that, they were in the Super Bowl. So he's like, yo, I'm going to do the same thing I did returning the Panthers around.
Well, you know what, though? And I hope he does that year, that because John Fox builds the defense and quarterbacks that don't make mistakes. So hopefully he can do that. Hopefully Orton can win a championship. What I'm saying is I just want to know what the goal is, because I hate when teams make moves because he gives it the bet. Like, I want to win a championship. I don't want to be 10-6 or 11-5 for 10 straight years and don't win a chip. And that's not a shot at Joe Eagles, but – I want to win a championship. I don't
want to
be
above average. I was about to go ahead and say that. I was about to say you don't want to be the birds. Hey, but Jim, he did go to the chip with bum ass DeLome, so y'all got some kind of hope.
Oh, you about to start, Brad? Let's move on before Brad starts. Real quick,
hey,
what
Jimmy,
is y'all opinion of
Jimmy? Real quick, Jimmy and everybody. Tebow also made $8 million this year. Just to let y'all know, he made $8 million.
That has to factor into it. Also, he has star power. He's arguably the greatest college quarterback ever. So, but I mean, with all that being said, if he can't play, he can't play. Ship his ass out too. But let's see if he can play. With that being said, what do you guys think about Cam Newton and his his maturation from one week to the next? He has had his first start.
I didn't see anything overly impressive. I didn't see anything that I didn't think he could do. You know, there were certain throws that he still has some trouble making, but I mean, I guess, you know, he's improved since he got to camp, but you know, for that team,
it's
probably their best option.
I watched a couple analysts talk about it. Yeah, I'm not going to pretend like this is my thought, but a couple analysts in the Four Letters were talking about the one thing that impressed them, and after watching them like talk about this and show the replays, I did notice it, is how he controlled the huddle, because I forgot that when he was in Auburn, they didn't even call plays in the huddle. Like, they just, you know, they went out there and played street ball, so to speak. So he is, like, improving in terms of the mental side of the game. To me, what it looks like he's putting the work in. Now, whether that can sustain, we'll see. Once he starts to get credit, you know how some cats get credit, and that's all, you know, it all goes downhill from there. But it looks like he's putting the work in. Because
I believe in him when he gets his teammates to go out and they all get that team tattoo.
I haven't seen anything yet that's making me say he's going to be able to do it at this level, but I also haven't seen anything that tells me he can't. So I do see potential in him, but there's so many other variables that play into it. Like Jimmy said, will he do the work? You know, will he work on those throws? Like that was mentioned, and that he's still having some trouble with. And at the end of the day, his decision-making and his control of the huddle and the team. So he's going to have an opportunity. He's going to go through his ups and downs as any rookie quarterback thrown into the fire will. So we'll see. I mean, I think the jury is still out on him to me. I can't really put my finger on it.
As we're talking about him, he just ran in a touchdown.
Yo, I think he's
David. He's going to have about six of those this year.
I think he's David Garrard. I think he's David Garrard with better wheels. They run tight end drags right across and in front of them, crossing routes, and on the edges they run their receivers out 10 yards and stop. There's no timing patterns. There's nothing down the field. There's nothing exciting.
His tight end,
y'all. No, he played like two quarters. Give him a shot. Give him a chance to get on it. They're not going to open the offense up, and he just. You know what I mean, like, damn, he didn't even have like a training camp, like. Give him a chance. I mean, of course, that's what they do with all young quarterbacks.
Yeah, man, he hasn't won no overtime games yet.
He's going to put Shockey back.
I think Brad was like, he hasn't won any overtime games yet. He hasn't been in this situation, this situation.
He, me he hasn't won one single coin toss. Yo, just give me an answer. Who do you think is going to start for the Redskins, Rex or Beck?
Beck.
I think they're going to go with Beck. If it was me, I would go with Rex. Both of them, they've been impressive for who they are. But Rex has a better grasp on the But I think they're going to end up going with Beck. That's what they wanted from
Jordan. What'd you say, Austin? You say the same thing, Beck?
Yeah, it's going to be Beck.
Would you say Beck or Rex?
I would go with Rex, but it's just like I was thinking the same thing Dev said in regards to the fact that Rex probably has a better grasp on the system, and Beck hasn't done anything, at least that I've seen, that has set him head and shoulders above Rex. But
all right, Doc, say what you say.
He said negative.
That's what's up.
Beckman said roll.
Real quick, I just want to get you guys' opinion, if you can make it real fast on this, about going back to Cam Newton, though, because he started bowling now. But going back to him, did you guys hear the tattoo issue? How the owner said that he wasn't wanting to get a tattoo, or, you know, what is your opinion of that? Real as fast as you can make it, because we're running out of time, but what is your opinion of that?
All right, I'll jump in. I think the owner's looking at money that can be made with Cam Newton being marketed as a clean-cut individual. It's like the clean-cut guy is back in style. So I think that's the owner's seed, as opposed to the guy tatted up, grilled out, with piercings all over the place, especially after seeing Dennis Rodman in the NBA Hall of Fame.
And it's not just them. It's not just the owners. It's, you know, Cam Newton's earning potential. They figure, like, I want to make you the face of the franchise. And he didn't forbid the dude from getting tattoos. He just asked him when he was drafted. He was like, you know, do you plan on getting tattoos and piercings or anything like that? And he was like, you know, no. He's like, all right, well, keep it that way. Because, you know, we're trying to make you the face of our franchise. So,
we're trying to make you the Donovan McNabb of
The story comes out to try to make us all play the race card, which a lot of people did, but I don't think it needs to be played in this situation.
I mean, when you have a white Southern owner talking to a kid from the inner city, telling him, "Boy, we don't want you getting a
tattoo,
boy."
That's what
everybody's boy.
Yeah, if you know the context, I think if see, we don't really know the context of the conversation. I mean, we heard how he said it. So I understand what he's saying. I understand the point that Richardson is making. Like, yeah, don't destroy your image. Even though there's some people with kind of crazy images that have still made a lot of money. But, like, he didn't forbid him.
It's still his team. So, like, yeah, they, you know, people make money like that.
But I don't know if you can do that for one player, though. That's the only thing. If he was forbidding him from doing it.
No, he didn't.
If he was forbidding it, that's one thing.
If he was tatted from head to toe, it wouldn't matter anyway. He plays football. It's not. I mean, you look at the NBA, the top marketed players in the NBA all tatted up from, like, you know, got sleeves on their arm. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I do agree that people try to make it a race. What you say?
No, I was with you. I was like, I really don't think it matters. But
man, if you win, they don't care what you do, yo.
Exactly.
Like, yo, if you win, winning heals everything, yo. If you win a lot, they'll allow you to punch toddlers in the mouth if you win. All they
do
is lose,
you're probably
going
to tell them to get some tattoos to change stuff up.
But you know what, Joe? Like Austin mentioned earlier, we can't front. I mean, look how much of a windfall financially, you know, how much respect socially that your boy has gotten from keeping, you know, that squeaky clean image. He overrated like a mug. So it's like, it didn't matter how many times Donovan.
Mickey,
it didn't matter how many times he messed up. As long as he kept that squeaky clean image, he also told him
not to grow his hair long. And look, Donovan had the fro for a bit. He told him not to grow his hair long too, right? And Donovan was rocking that nasty nappy fro and then the braids backwards.
Well, he said I was thinking about growing my hair out. He was like, "I like your haircut." He tried to put a passive aggressive route.
Yeah.
He probably patted him on the head like, "I like your haircut, little boy."
Yeah.
I like that hair there. Don't he sound like Foghorn Leghorn?
Airbrush off of magazine cover.
Yeah.
Yo.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
I say that now, boy.
I like that haircut now, that boy.
What done happened to Jimmy Lee? Yo, anyway, real quick, the Colts signed Kerry Collins, and I don't know if y'all heard what your man Reggie Wayne said. Reggie Wayne ain't like it. Reggie Wayne said, "I don't know him." He said, "We not vanilla, man. We ain't no simple offense." So for him to come in here and be a starter, I don't see it. I think it's a step back for the team. I don't care who you are. I'm not going to let anyone come in here and just push someone like Curtis Pater aside like you're that dog now. You know what I mean? So he said he
Reggie Wayne came to camp in a dump truck as well and a hard hat. So I'm seeing how much credibility does he really have.
That's the only person I've heard of this season, this preseason, who said anything positive that was concerning Curtis Painter, because he stinks.
I wonder why he was sticking up for him so much, though.
Right,
regularly like that.
He flipped him the ball all the time.
No, he didn't. He couldn't get him the ball. He stinks.
Yo, my man was like, look, he ain't going to come take Curtis' spot. Not my brother Curtis.
I'm like, yo. Your man Larry Fitzgerald broke the bank. What you guys think about this new dough he getting? Yo, he got a bunch of chicken. Yo, they gave him a nice chick. Which do you think is going to affect that team? Is it going to hurt
much,
the team in the long run?
How much is guaranteed?
$50 million
guaranteed.
Jimmy, remember when we all had that conversation? This was before they even started comparing them. We did that first. We asked our Facebook members if this would affect Chris Johnson's demands. And all of those dudes were trying to act like, well, it don't have anything to do with Chris Johnson, blah, blah, blah. What is everybody doing?
Right.
Exactly, because Chris
Johnson. People bite off of us every week. This is what we do.
Chris Johnson is now looking at this like, okay, they gave him, it wasn't just a best at his position type deal. They gave him one of the best in the league type deals. So now this gives him more ammo to go in and fire at the Titans, and I think it's setting a bad precedent because you're going to start having a lot of people overpaid.
They're creating that playmaker. It's that playmaker thing where you can't. It's not like you're extracting them from their position, and you're looking at them as playmakers and what they do, and the fact that they have on the team. So like that's. I don't understand how people would think that CJ wouldn't be affected by that. Like, because CJ was talking about that like that before Fitzgerald's deal was signed. He was like, yo, I want to be paid like a playmaker, not good as, you know. So,
and PJ,
it's gonna change
he got some nice
chicken,
like 8 years, $120.
It's because the average fan has no clue about the business side of the game. They just go around talking about pay that man, what he asking for. Like, you can just go around giving out money. You know, Fitzgerald is already the highest paid receiver in the league. His deal is already the greatest ever, making like $10 million per.
Right.
Now he's making $15 per.
Right.
They just set a nasty precedent, I'm telling you.
Yep.
Yo, he got him
trouble,
a nice
trouble.
Team. He got what I like to call the great-grandchildren money, because that's who will be spending that bill. Yo, but I mean, it's crazy, but outside of, like, you know, just the league, what about his own team? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what about his own team? How can they make certain moves that they're paying $100 million to a receiver?
Yeah, and they're paying, and they broke Cobb off, and he hadn't proved
it. Kevin Cobb and him is making, like, $200 million together.
See, but that's
Andy Reid got $20 million of that on the side note, because Andy Reid helped.
And then that goes back to what I was just saying, how the average fan doesn't understand business because, you know, everybody's saying, yeah, the Cardinals did the right thing, this and that. When have the Cardinals ever been considered a smart organization? And then they're going to tie this much money up in two players. You need way more than a quarterback and a wide receiver to be successful in football.
And ain't nobody talking about paying the lineman anything.
And that's right. Where the game is won. The game is won in the trenches.
Yo, fans get upset when linemen get paid.
Yeah, they do. Why don't you give them all that money? Fans want the fantasy players to get paid.
You can't see your money at work.
All right,
you,
fellas.
Yeah.
Well, it is about that time for us to get
out of here.
That's my dude.
Rest in peace to the homie, yo. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in the war room this evening. Shout out to the chat room, our Facebook page members, our Twitter followers, and all the people who chimed into our show this evening. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for another edition of The Soldier Dudes. Along with our fantasy football preview, we'll catch you up on the latest from the week of sports, and we'll be joined by special guest, sports agent and former pro basketball player with the Washington Wizards and Portland Trailblazers, Mitchell Butler. Yes, he'll be here to drop some science on the business side of basketball as well as his playing days. So anyway, check us out next week with Mitchell Butler, y'all. Until next week, be easy.
Yes, yeah. Smoke a Buddha through righteous steps, deep like the shining. Sparkle like a diamond, sneak a Uzi on the island. Cousin Rockwell. It ain't hard to tell. Try again. Wisdom be leaking out my grapefruit truth. I dominate break loose, giving Mike's ministry cycles. Streets disciple. I rock beats this mega trifle. And groove even smoother than moves by Villanova. You're still a soldier. I'm like Sly Stone and Cobra. Packing like a roster in the weed spot. Vocals are squeezed Glocks and CZs drop, though they need not to sneak. My poetry's deep. I never fell. Nas's rap should be locked in a cell. It ain't hard to tell.